I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Pam Wiseman. She's Executive Director of the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and Daniel Abram. He's Deputy Director of Animal Protection New Mexico. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thanks very much.
So there is a very interesting and important coalition between your two organizations, one of which works with people who are victims of domestic violence, the other of which works with animals that are sometimes victims of animal abuse. And it turns out those two things go together.
They certainly do. Just a couple of days ago, I had a meeting with some people, and they were lamenting the fact that animal abuse gets as much or more attention, in their view, as does the abuse of children, right? And they thought that maybe that wasn't the appropriate kind of allocation of time and resources. And in our view, those things are very much connected. The abuse of animals and the abuse of children often happen at the same time. In 75% of the cases where there is some domestic violence, the abuse of animals is witnessed by children. And in fact, children are often the targets of abuse when animals are being harmed in some way in a domestic violence incident. So I don't believe in the idea of, you know, one victim being more worthy or less worthy. The fact is that these are connected. People who abuse children also abuse animals, and we need to do something about both of those issues.
And there are some people who abuse animals first and then end up abusing people, and so it's kind of like a very red flag.
Right. It's definitely a marker. In fact, the research is very clear that people who grow up to be sociopaths often start by harming animals. So there's a very clear, I think, indisputable link between those two.
And abusers are often known to use the human-animal relationship as a power tactic as well. We have some, you know, horrible stories that demonstrate just that. But, you know, many of the people entering domestic violence shelters today have also reported that their abuser has threatened to harm an animal or has actually injured an animal, in some cases killed the family pet.
There are some harrowing stories of people who get hurt because their perpetrator is threatening to abuse their animal. So either the animal or the person or both get abused.
That's right. In fact, one of our emblematic stories is about a little Italian greyhound named Sophie, who was a victim of abuse, as was her mother. And the woman was threatened so badly that she locked herself in the bathroom. And the abuser said, "If you don't come out of here, I'm going to take this kitchen knife and I'm going to stab your little dog." And that's exactly what he did. And when the woman heard the scream, she came out and she herself got stabbed. Now, fortunately, that story did have a happy ending, but I know that many, many don't.
So how are the two of your organizations working together?
Well, the Coalition Against Domestic Violence reached out to us in late 2013 and said, "Hey, you know, we recognize the link between animal abuse and other forms of interpersonal violence. We are aware of this work you're doing with placing the animals of abuse victims in temporary homes, and we want to help." And that was an extraordinary reach out because, you know, our programs often link the plights of people and animals. And for a statewide coalition that works on domestic violence issues to recognize that animals are a part of the equation in getting help and healing, I think is really remarkable. And I commend Pam and her staff for making that commitment to our group.
You know, I feel extremely fortunate and grateful to be able to spend time working on an issue that really matters to me. Well, there are two issues that really matter to me, and it's domestic violence and also the welfare of animals. So to be able to put these two together and to have the kind of relationship that we've developed with Animal Protection New Mexico is one of the highlights, I think, of the time that so far that I've spent here in New Mexico.
So what actually happens? So if somebody calls the New Mexico Coalition for Domestic Violence and says, "I need to leave a dangerous situation, but I'm scared for my pet," what happens next?
Well, in that case, and Animal Protection of New Mexico will work directly with the victim's advocate, and the advocate will then coordinate with us to try to find temporary placement for that victim's animal. And that could be in an agency like a boarding kennel or a veterinary office that has boarding facilities. But more likely, it's going to be one of our network of foster volunteers that have agreed to take on animals from these very difficult situations into their homes. And for a prolonged period of time, I mean, for the victim to access all this social services and domestic violence services that they need to access and not have to worry about what's happening to their animal, that animal might be away from their person for a month, 60 days, even longer. And so it's a real commitment of our volunteers to reach out and say, okay, we can do this, we have a space, and we'll take this animal on. Now, remember too, like we've talked about, the animal, his or herself, might also have been the victim of violence. And so the animal will be traumatized. Even if that's not the case, you're taking a dog or cat or even horse or other type of animal out of its familiar environment and putting it into a totally different one. So the whole process is challenging.
Very much so. Has this been happening for a while? I mean, has this program been in place for some time?
It has been, actually. It's been supported by private donations from people who care about this issue since about 1999. But more recently, because of the partnership that we've developed with Pam's group, we were able to successfully lobby for some funding at the last short budget session in 2014. And thanks to Senator Nancy Rodriguez, who championed the bill, a small appropriation was added to the state budget, which is going to be funneled through Children, Youth, and Families Department to the coalition, and we will be the service provider on the animal side for that funding.
And of course, when a woman, for example, takes her family to a domestic violence shelter, usually they can't bring their dogs or their animals.
In most cases, that's true. There are a few shelters around New Mexico who have maybe some, you know, a couple of kennels, and maybe there are a few shelters that might allow smaller dogs or a cat or something. But in general, you can imagine, right, that would be a really hard thing to do. And it's really important because as many as half of domestic violence victims have stated that they did not leave their abusive relationship because of concern for the pets. So, and it's the same for children, right? They don't leave out of concern for their children and whether the abuser would find them. So there are a lot of people who are staying in abusive relationships a lot longer than they have to, subjecting themselves, their children, and their animals to abuse because they don't have any place for those animals to go. So this is a very important service.
And I might add to that, of the handful of domestic violence shelters that can receive animals, you know, they're really not equipped to take care of all of those animals' needs. There needs to be possibly veterinary care at the very outset. There needs to be temperament testing, because if the dog is exhibiting vicious behavior, it's difficult to pass that dog along to a foster care volunteer. And so we're really depending on a broader network of individuals who have the experience to care for animals to help out.
Yes, that's a very important piece that we really rely on Animal Protection's expertise in this, because he's right. You could put a dog in a shelter that is not safe to be around children. The dog could run away. The dog could bite someone. There's so many potential issues, and our programs are not trained or educated and in no position to be able to deal with that. So we're really grateful that the Animal Protection can do that.
And think about even the step of transporting the animal to their new safe haven. Mm-hmm. I mean, that person has to be very sensitive to what's going on with the victim, because they're parting from their beloved companion animal, and that's a very traumatic part of this whole process.
We're talking to Pam Wiseman from the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Daniel Abram of Animal Protection New Mexico. I think it's really important that we talk about this kind of thing on the radio, because it's great to have all these programs in place, but if people don't know about them, I mean, somebody listening right now might tell a friend of theirs who is in a situation, here, you have access to this, and it's basically a phone call away, as opposed to this kind of like great conundrum, what do I do?
It's important to point out, and Daniel will be able to say more about this, I think, that our intention was to spend a fair amount of time this year developing the infrastructure to make this program work. So that means finding the vets and finding the foster care programs and making sure that we have the right insurance and all of those things that go into really developing a strong program. And so it may be some time, I think, Daniel can say more, before we're able to really be up and running. Hopefully that will be within this year.
Absolutely. And to your listeners out there, I would like to offer up the opportunity to help us out with this program and volunteer to become a foster care provider. If anyone out there is interested, we desperately need to expand this network. And if you are interested in providing relief to the animals of domestic violence victims, you can fill out an application. You can receive an application by calling Sharon Jonas, who's our coordinator for this program. And her number is 505-503-5907. Now, for people who might be experiencing violence themselves, we have set up a special hotline just for this service, and they can call 1-844-323-2273, or that's 844-323-CARE.
And that's an awful lot of numbers, and if people didn't have their pencils out... We will also give a link at the end of the show to Animal Protection New Mexico, and presumably all those numbers will be there.
Really appreciate that, and all the information can also be found on our website, too, which is apnm.org.
apnm.org. Tell us a little more about the group Animal Protection New Mexico, what you do.
Well, we're a statewide animal advocacy and protection organization. We've been around for about 35 years, believe it or not. And we really focus on programs that intersect the needs of animals and the needs of people. Of course, animals to us are paramount. We try to focus on systemic changes, and we actually do a fair amount of work up at the state legislature through our sister organization, which is Animal Protection Voters.
Right, right. Now, what about the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence?
So our organization is a not-for-profit, 501c3, and we provide training and assistance and support and a voice, really, to about 30 domestic violence programs from around the state. We work with legislators, and we do public education, and we try to partner with groups like Animal Protection New Mexico. In fact, we're always looking for ways to expand what we do and to broaden our scope. So this was a really kind of a natural alliance, I think, especially because it came on the heels of our getting some special funding also from the state legislature to work with children. And I can't stress enough how frequent it is and how common it is for domestic abusers to abuse animals in front of their children as a way to harm the children and to harm the child's mother. And you can imagine, right, I grew up with, you know, stuffed animals and little storybooks with cute animals, and children sort of naturally love animals. And you can imagine what that must be like to have your animal hurt or killed or threatened by a parent. I don't know how some of those children recover, and I find that to be a really disturbing behavior. And I know there are organizations, and Daniel can speak more about that, that actually work with people who are animal abusers to try to stop that behavior.
That's true. And, you know, to your point, when a child does witness animal abuse, you know, this is about stopping the cycle of violence, because that child statistically is 7 or 8 more times likely to be an animal abuser themselves, either in childhood or as an adult.
I think, you know, Animal Protection New Mexico has a saying, I hope I get this right, it's making animals matter.
That's
is that right?
In
New Mexico communities?
In every New Mexico community.
And I think that I love that tagline. I think it's fantastic. And this project is really a part of that, right? Animals do matter. The people matter and the animals matter. We're not in competition. It's not as if we help one, we're not helping the other. We have to do both, and we have to do them both at the same time.
Tell us more about these programs that help, what is it, therapy for animal abusers?
Well, there is a program out there that we have helped move into the New Mexico community. We actually received a few years ago, back in 2010, an ARA grant that allowed us to, first of all, do quite a bit of law enforcement training, so law enforcement officers can recognize in an abusive situation that an animal might be in need as well. And also, we were able to train therapists throughout the state in a model called Anacare, And that was developed by the Animals and Societies Institute. You can learn more about the Animalcare model on their website. But it is a program that's designed, a therapeutic program that's designed to try to rehabilitate animal abusers. And we've done some work ourselves with our own staff, court-appointed work, working with people who have been arrested for animal abuse.
Does that program work? In other words, people who abuse animals, they go through a program and then they don't do it anymore?
I think that the program has had has been published and had some peer review models looked at, and I don't think that every animal abuser can be rehabilitated, but at least there's a service out there. There's about 5 or 6 registered Animalcare therapists out there in our state.
Some people are just sociopaths. Shouldn't say just sociopaths. Some people are sociopaths, and it seems like those folks are the kind of people you get them off the streets as quickly as possible and keep them off as long as possible. Pam's nodding.
Well, no, I was just thinking that was a question that I have, and I don't know the answer to it. How many of the people who were enrolled in Animalcare or those kinds of models are sociopaths? Because typically they're not very responsive to any kind of treatment, right? Particularly as they get older. And so I don't know if you know the answer to that, or
I don't know what the statistics look like. But like I said, I believe that there are some people that can be awakened to their own behavior, and some people that just aren't able to reach that level.
Well, when you think about the Michael Vick case, right? You know, he had all those Dobermans, and he, you know, they were shocked and abused, and he supposedly was rehabilitated, right? And he goes out and he talks about what he did. Whether he really means that or doesn't mean that is questionable. I don't know the answer, but
well, and luckily through our work, we've been over the years finally able to make animal abuse a 4th-degree felony, whereas for many, many years it was a misdemeanor crime.
Yeah.
We did some programs earlier this year with you, Pam Wiseman, and with the conference that you did on talking about, not just domestic violence, but talking about domestic violence.
Right.
What has come of that?
Well, we got a really, I think, fantastic response. Really from across the country. In the end, we had, I think, 23 states in Canada represented. And we, in fact, did have a sort of a piece of that that was devoted to how you talk about this link between animal abuse and the abuse of humans. And so I'm happy to report that our next conference will be in November of 2015. We're doing it again. And this time I'm also looking for people who do animal communication. And I've talked to some, and I don't mean animal communication in the sort of
woo-woo.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for using that word. That's sort of a charlatan kind of thing, right? I've seen people do that. Oh, your dog says that you're so nice and he just loves you so much, right? Not that kind of animal.
And by the way, your dog's not named Fido.
That's right. Right, not that. Although I think that's, you know, I'm sure that has its place, not to disparage anyone's work. But I talked to some people who are professionals, who are PhDs in psychology or comparative psychology, and who work with animals who are traumatized from either witnessing or being abused. And I actually didn't realize that there were such people, but there are. And I had some very interesting conversations with them, and I'm going to be looking to bring those people, I think, to our conference to talk about how you understand what your animal is saying to you about what it has experienced.
Are there animals that are traumatized by witnessing abuse?
Do you have dogs?
I have dogs.
Well, I find dogs to be some of the most empathetic creatures on the planet. Yeah. And a dog can recognize when you raise your voice in a violent fashion.
Yeah.
You know, a dog can recognize what's happening when a child is crying. The dog will creep over slowly with its head lowered, touch you with its nose. You know, I think that there is absolutely trauma that occurs even if the animal isn't being directly injured.
Very interesting.
And I might add to your last question, one of the ways that we're starting to address how to talk about animal and domestic abuse is starting with our children. We have a humane education program that runs in public schools in 3 counties called the Animal Connection. And at the beginning of this program, we actually ask the kids to make a drawing about some negative experience they've had with animals. And this is before any instruction has taken place, and you wouldn't believe the types of things that these kids will draw. I mean, blood, you know, animals being beaten, even animals in a dogfighting ring that they have witnessed.
Yeah.
And so we start that conversation gently and in an age-appropriate way with our kids.
I think after the conference that I attended and thinking more about both domestic violence and animal abuse and the connection between those things, I don't work in this field. You guys work in this field. Every day you are exposed to stories of one kind or another, and maintaining your own equanimity must be very challenging. I mean, I can imagine if I were in your shoes having to deal with an almost insurmountable level of anger and helplessness.
Yeah, I think, you know, in our field, we're finally starting to pay attention to this fact. I mean, what we know is that exposure to violence, that is not just being a target, which is bad enough, but witnessing it, is very dangerous to people's health and welfare, both in the short term and in the long term. And lots of our people suffer a lot from having to hear the stories, even, of people who have been victimized. And in fact, the effect on the brain is the same when you are simply hearing the story as if it had happened to you, right? And so we're talking about effects like researchers now know various kinds of diseases, cancers and heart disease and strokes, depression, substance abuse. I mean, almost our worst social problems and issues arise from either experiencing or witnessing violence and trauma. And these are really serious issues. And yet, you know, in many of our programs, we pay people $8 or $9 an hour, or 10 if they're really good. And we offer them benefits, maybe or maybe not, and we ask them to work long hours. And our funders say to us all of the time, you need to show the evidence that what you're doing is working, right? As if, I mean, I understand that funders want that information, and we'd like it too, but we don't have lots of PhDs on staff, right, you know, writing peer-reviewed articles and, you know, conducting experiments. And so the demands are enormous, the stress is high, the exposure to trauma is devastating, and it takes a toll on people. And so the turnover is about, you know, a little shy of 50%. In our domestic violence organizations. It's hard to grow and develop and get to be a better place and really meet your mission when you have half of your staff are new every year. So these are very serious problems. We see our people with substance abuse issues. They get divorced. They're emotional. They're angry. And mostly, given what you said, Marisha, they feel powerless and helpless and hopeless. And that's not a recipe for, you know, happiness, obviously, in your life. Now, the last thing I guess I want to say about that is, for me, so we're working on these issues. So there is, I do want to say that there is hope. It's not like, well, that's a terrible situation and nothing will ever come of it that's any good. We really are working on it. But I can say for me that I could not do the work that Daniel and his organization does. If I had to hear about animals being abused every day, I would be a basket case. I couldn't function. I couldn't do it. So I guess everyone does, as you told me once, right, what they can do. And so I work with people, and Daniel's organization works with animals. And so I don't know how you all
we also struggle this. With what they call, you know, compassion fatigue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we run an animal cruelty hotline aside from this care program. Yeah. So, and that's a statewide hotline. So every day, all day, we are getting reports about animal abuse of various levels of severity.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't exactly take that home to the dinner table and share what's going on in the state with your kids and your wife or whoever. And so, ironically, it's the person that's most effective at handling these situations is a person that can focus on the process of getting help and be somewhat emotionally detached from what's going on for the sake of fulfilling that process. Let's get a law enforcement officer out there. Let's get that animal to a safe haven. Here are the steps we have to take. It's hard work, but if you focus on what you have to do, that's the best for the people and the animals.
These are major societal problems, and the fact is that a few people, a handful, you know, relatively, are assuming the burden of trying to do something about this. And this problem is much bigger than the few organizations and people who are working on it. We absolutely have to have more, I think, support and more involvement and engagement by a lot of people, and more funding.
And more funding. And as you have said in the past when we've talked about this, we have a society where violence is at our core in many ways.
And this is, you know, not to change the subject, but this has recently come up, right, with the whole NFL issue, right, where we now have three NFL players who are accused of violence, one child abuse, right, and one in which we have a video, right, of Ray Rice punching his then fiance and knocking her out in an elevator, right? And I think the tendency is to think, well, that's because it's the NFL and the NFL is violent. And while it's true that football is violent, I think it's just that it's common, right? It's more common than we know, and it's not exclusive to NFL players. It's throughout, right? And the people that we most admire, our models, are people who often use violence and who are competitive and who are, frankly, more interested in the pursuit of their self-interest than in anything else, right? So these are our models, and is it any wonder, right, that we have these problems and that we behave the way we do?
Pam Wiseman is the executive director of the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Daniel Abram is deputy director of Animal Protection New Mexico. They are on the web at apnm.org.
Correct.
And Coalition Against Domestic Violence is nmcadv.org.
Right.
I want to thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's been a real pleasure.
Yes, thank you.